This is American Roots. I'm Nick Spitzer. Van Dyke Parks could be considered the man behind the curtain for so many artists. His creative touch in the studio and clever work as an arranger graces countless sessions from the 1960s to today. The Beach Boys, Ry Cooder, Randy Newman, the list goes on. Parks wasn't just at the board, he was on the recordings too, as a session musician and songwriter. He also had time in his career for writing and recording his own music, a mingling of classical training with social criticism and an attraction to vernacular music. And then there's his love of the trickster, Burr Abbott. But we started our conversation talking about an early collaboration with the folk singer, Donovan.
I'm not so centrally interested in music. Music is a byproduct of my real obsessions. My obsessions have to do with the immediacy of social need. Perhaps that sounds mannered to you, but that's who I am. At that point, Donovan was defiled because everybody thought he was a Dylan wannabe. In the case of Donovan's Colors, I thought it was a beautiful piece. It was do-re-mi. It was very diatonic music, very simple to digest, and you might even think boring. But in fact, I found it as clear as glacial ice, and I decided the first thing I would do is rhapsodize on this particular melody.
Yellow is the color of my true love's here in the morning. When we rise in the morning, when we rise, that's the time, that's the time I love the best.
It's hard to put this in fair context now, but in those days, it seemed to me like the thing not to do. It was the road less traveled. And I decided to take it. And to me, it was where folk music collides with authorship. And that fascinated me.
Gotcha.
It was just a continuum of what had interested me all my life. So I just decided to make that my first subsidized recording at Warner Brothers. And and I never expected it to be heard. It was beyond me, Nick. I could not think that anyone would listen to it. But it was a way to learn the studio.
Wait a minute, where are we? See, what it is he's the organ's on 2/4, and you guys think it's the one beat, don't you? Here we go. Play hard and strong all the way. And watch me on that part, yeah. 28.
We can't talk and not talk about Brian Wilson and the Beach Boys, who are, of course, very much a part of this era and creativity, and you're a part of them in certain interesting ways. And, hey, Barbershop Quartet meets Chuck Berry meets, at one point, Van Dyke Parks.
I wasn't so impressed with the Beach Boys. What it suggested was the Eisenhower era. It was a sleepwalk narcosis to me, which was totally Dullsville. That it seemed to me a part of a self-satisfaction that Brian Wilson wanted to escape. Brian Wilson wanted to investigate. And by the time I met him, he was in that process. He was in the middle of Pet Sounds, on which I played. I've bragged enough about the fact that I suggested a cello and the triplet fundamentals in Good Vibrations, which actually became the Ruby Slippers. It became the signature shot of the picture.
I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitations. I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me excitations.
And it was just suggesting that cello to Brian. I think that secured me a job as a person who had to chase his melodies in smile with thoughts, that is, words. And so I did. I became a lyricist because I had made a musical contribution, and that's the way I look at it.
This is American Roots. I'm Nick Spitzer here in New Orleans, and we're talking to the great arranger, composer, songwriter, producer, Van Dyke Parks. And I have to say, in doing the audio archaeology on you. It's nonstop because you've done so many different things in so many places. But one of the things that maybe our listeners aren't aware of is that you were involved with the Byrds on the 5D album, and I think you played a keyboard on 5D.
That's true, and I believe I was in a state of 5D with the group when we did it. But I was so honored to do that because I loved the Byrds. I did not want to be in a group. I didn't want to get clapped at. I did not want to be screamed at. I didn't want to be seen and heard. I wanted to learn something about the studio. But it kept me alive to play on that date. That was money that was absolutely necessary once present.
I opened my heart to the whole universe, and I found it was loving. And I saw the great blunder my teachers had made, scientific delirium madness.
They were of tremendous psychic importance to me and psychological importance because they were the antidote to the British invasion. And they were the only solution available. There was a group called Paul Revere and the Raiders, but their costumes didn't really amuse me that much. But the Byrds had something to say. And at that time in my life, the Byrds were a perfect way to celebrate that social discontent and agitation for reform, and that to be with the Byrds on that record was a cameo that I really have always enjoyed and been grateful for.
Well, let me ask you this. I will admit that I first discovered Van Dyke Parks when Van Dyke Parks is Discovering America, the fabulous recording Discover America, which has a great deal of Trinidad Calypso in it.
Well, yes. In fact, I was producing a record of a group called Esso Trinidad Steel Band. Absolutely incredible, a phenomenal ensemble. They did things on that record like Saber Dance by Cacciatorian.
I can hear that as a great steel band piece, actually.
Oh, it is. It is. You can hear the definition, and it's to me as refreshing to a critical ear as anything you might hear out of the string section of the Berlin Philharmonic. It was absolutely incredible. And they came to me through Liberace. They were an opening act. He called them his boys. Whatever that suggests to you, it suggested something unfortunate to me. These fellows deserved a better view of America, and they didn't get it. I went through the South with them. And one point, the bus broke down, and I got out of the bus with him, and a farmer up the hill blew a few cartridges from his shotgun from his porch just to let us know that he didn't want us around as we got the bus repaired. They saw an America which I had never been aware of. They were a saintly crew, and I loved them like brothers. Your question, Nick, was, you know, my love for calypso and steel drums. Well, in a coffee house at the Insomniac in Hermosa Beach, I had to follow a steel band, Andrew De La Bastide and his steel band. And that would, and believe me, that's not an easy act to follow.
The You know, I'm a big fan of the Burrabbit stories. You did a record called Jump that's got, looks to be Burrabbit right there on the cover. And I assume you have a certain appreciation of Burrabbit's trickster abilities.
Yes, but there's no trickery in my desire to work. To do a record album is to stand up, stripped and bleeding, in front of the vulgar public gaze. There's nothing easy about it. It requires self-examination, the ability to take the rust off your hinges openly and be wounded in self-exploration. Br'er Rabbit stories had been a signature part of my life. A lot of people say, well, where are you from? Or, you know, what cities have you lived in and so forth. I don't think it's so much a matter of where you're from that suggests a biography. I believe a person is the things that he has read, the art that he has seen, the cultural influences that have impacted his personality.
Off the wall, a flower, now the dance has begun. It's a shining hour, till all our dancing is done. Mammy, whammy, jammy, cooking up in a stove. For me and my buttercup, things have been looking up in harmony grow.
I was determined that Br'er Rabbit not be condemned to a southern nursery. So I decided I would celebrate these morality tales of Br'er Rabbit. They have to do with a man in a dram glass. They have to do with infidelity in marriage. They have to do with the tectonics between the rich and the poor. They speak to our times. They are what Mark Twain called our most precious piece of stolen goods. I decided to make them the basis of a record album. And that music, by the way, I guarantee you, Nick, it doesn't sound like much, but it just won't go away. An audience deserves the opportunity to laugh and cry at the same moment, well, in the same room.
That strikes me as very much the sort of the classic blues African-American aesthetic, the idea that laughing to keep from crying. And Burrabbit could be low on the power and hiding in the briar patch, but when push comes to shove, he uses his words and his charm and his tricksterism to get out of a tangle and keep going down the road. And this record's got a great jaunty Burrabbit feeling to it. And your life has a great Burrabbit feeling to it, to me.
Well, I am centrally content, and I hope that that's shown in my work, because it didn't escape me when I was collecting my wits about Jump, that my parents had been predeceased by a son in his glory the day before his 24th birthday. When I ran into the tale of Br'er Rabbit with his dead son Riley in his arms, by the way, my brother's name was Riley, it didn't escape me. I put every ounce of personal conviction into the work. I would prefer to have recognition in my lifetime. The hell with immortality. Who needs it? I don't. I would love to have the riches that come, or the sustenance that comes from an easy life in the arts. But that is not to be. And at the age of 71, all I can say is, I've had enough, and I'm grateful because enough to me is plenty to go on.
Well, thank you for walking a few steps here with me, Van Dyke Parks, on American Roots.
Nick, I just want to tell you what an honor it has been, and I'm just very grateful to you for taking the time.
Thank you.
Van Dyke Parks bringing Burr Abbott to the orchestra live at the reincarnated Ash Grove on Santa Monica Pier in 1998. We'll hear more from Van Dyke Parks when we explore his connection to Randy Newman's songbook, coming up on American Roots.